Okay, we're live.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday. I believe it's Wednesday. No, Tuesday, May 19th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosches, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchak and also Commissioner Randy Christman. This is again a work session on Northern Divide Wind LLC, case number PU-19-376 and case number PU-19-377. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Christman.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, but nor do I. I'm ready to get started.
Okay, and then Steve, before I turn it over to Commissioner Fedorchak, since we have everyone identified on the screen, does that suffice versus having to go around the table, so to speak, virtual table for introductions or noting who is on the call?
With the exception that we should know who the callers are that have dialed in, because I do not have a name for those. So anyone who is called in rather than used the GoToMeeting, please identify.
Pam Trollick, Liuna.
Is there anyone else?
Looks like we have at least three others, and then I know one of the callers is Commissioner Fedorchak calling in via phone.
Hi, Steve. This is Stacy from staff just listening in.
Thank you.
Hi, Steve. Okay, this is Katie Fury with Northern Divide Wind. I am using the GoTo platform as well as calling in, so one of those callers is my landline.
Thank you very much, Casey.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Commissioner, I believe we are good to go.
Okay, then I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Fedorchak. It is all yours.
Commissioner Fedorchak, I believe on your phone you need to dial *6 to unmute.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. Thanks, Matt. All right. I don't have any opening comments either. I think we had a great hearing on this a few weeks ago. The time for public comment and additional information has expired now, and so our record is closed, and I'm going to turn it over to Brian to walk through any outstanding issues that we need to discuss and open it up for questions and concerns that anybody might have, any other commissioners or staff have regarding the project. So Brian, why don't I kick it over to you? We have received, I will say, we have received a lot of public comment on this. I haven't actually checked to see which, you know, the exact number, and maybe you have counted, but it was pretty equal between the support and opposition prior the last time I checked. And so if you have an update on that too, that would be helpful. So I'll turn it over to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Commission. Thanks, Commissioner Fedorchak. There has been a lot of public input in this application. We have 154 separate filings from the public. Now, that does include some from the pre-hearing filing folder as well. But there's also been a substantial amount of information that was received in the, as post-hearing filings. I guess the highlight would probably be the report submitted by Karen Smith. I did have a chance to read through her report, as the commission knows she did chime in at the on the original Berkwin project, and quite frankly, most of the criticisms that she has about the about this project mirror what she was concerned about in the previous project. Basically, just the concern that this project will have an adverse impact to wildlife. Cites a lot of various studies, has a lot of authorities in there. As far as endangered species goes, nothing is substantially different from what we've seen in the past. Northern Divide Wind did provide a post-hearing brief where they addressed some of the arguments, as well as declarations from two of their employees. And again, a lot of it just reiterated what was already said in the citing application material. Going through the, I guess, public comments as a whole, it's about, I think, what everyone would have expected. There's a lot of people for the project, a lot of people against the project. The reasons against it are stuff that we heard at the hearing from some of the individuals. And then, you know, there's just a lot of people who are either are in favor of the project or aren't in favor of the project for various reasons. We also did receive a proposed finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order from the company that is filed on the docket as, I believe it's entry 164. Yeah, 164. And that's under the PU 19377 file. I did have a chance to go through the proposed findings. There's a few things I think we'll have to take a look at as we go through this project. You know, I think the primary issue that was raised with the Burke project is also going to come at issue here again are the wetlands. I know at the hearing there's a lot of testimony received about the wetlands and what efforts have been taken to mitigate the impact of the habitat, or at least the habitat that is used by a lot of waterfowl. And we've heard all of that. That's something that is addressed in the proposed findings. I think there's probably a few things we're going to want to adjust or take another look at. And then we also have going through this, just the general form of how we want the order to look, I think is something that would be helpful to discuss today, so we can get going and at least everybody in kind of the same direction towards getting a resolution to this one way or the other. I know in various other wind projects, we've either gone with a form type of order, or we've drafted something completely unique to the project. I'll leave it up to the commission to see how you want to proceed in this particular hearing. And then we also have the intervener, Launa, and I know they're listening in today. They also filed a post-hearing brief with a couple of proposed, proposed order provisions with respect to a request to have the company report the amount of local workers that are used in this project. So those are just kind of a couple of things that have happened since the hearing. And I think that's a good starting point, at least to get a discussion going for today.
Thanks, Brian. Can you guys hear me? Randy or somebody, can you guys let me know if you can hear me?
Yes.
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. All right. My video is really delayed, so you guys are in and out. Brian, can you... I think that's a great discussion point, and I went through the proposed order as well. From my view, the company did a lot to address the issues that were the big cause behind our denying this the last time, and that being, first of all, the wetlands, and then the impacts to the displacement, and then also the native prairie impacts and the overall size of the footprint. And so when you reference some issues regarding the wetlands that you think we need to talk about as presented in the proposed order, could you dig into those a little bit more.
Sure. And the issue that we ran into in the previous iteration of this project was it was the turbines being located right in the middle of a heavy wetland area. And I know both Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife voiced substantial concerns about that at the previous iteration of this project. And now when we look at the record before us in this proceeding, we don't have the pushback from Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and their wildlife experts at the hearing explained how they felt that they were avoiding all impacts to wetlands through the siting of the turbines in this project. I think the biggest thing that is different in this case is that we don't have the pushback from Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and they're not raising the concerns over the impacts to wetlands in this project as they did in the previous one. The company's proposed findings essentially, and I'm trying to pull it up right here, but it essentially says that there's no impact to wetlands, whether that be direct or indirect, and that was explained at the hearing through testimony, and also I think it was actually the pre-filed testimony of Mr. Jones. He got into that as well. So you know, I think if there's an area where the company has adduced substantial evidence showing a differential between the previous project and this one, it likely has to do with the impact that this project would have upon wetlands. And you know, I think the pre-filed testimony from Mr. Jones, as well as his testimony at hearing and their application as well, address that issue fairly thoroughly. The real question is, does the commission believe that there's no impact to wetlands or that there's minimal impact to wetlands? You know, the company's going to point out that they believe that there's no impact to wetlands, and that may or may not be true. I guess that's something that you're gonna have to look at the evidence and weigh yourself and provide direction as to how you want to address that in the order.
Okay, thank you. Were there any other outstanding issues that you see in terms of evidence, et cetera, or things that were left hanging at the hearing?
No, I think after the hearing, everybody who wanted to have a chance to get their information in has been able to do so, at least to my knowledge. I haven't heard of any outstanding issues. I know the company and the intervener have both submitted filings, which I view to be as their concluding documents in this case, and that's pretty much where things stand. I think everything that we're going to get as far as information is there, and it's just a matter of evaluating it and making a determination at this point.
Okay, Randy or Brian, what kind of issues do you guys have to discuss today?
Well, I'll start out, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'll have some others, but in staying on kind of the topic where we've been with the wetlands, I'm just going to weigh in with the amount of wetlands in the area. I have a hard time agreeing with an order that would say there is no impact, but I think minimal is the more proper term. And so I'll just weigh in on that. Now, associated with that was the issue that was discussed during the hearing and that Brian, you asked the company about and got further clarification. But in the discussion, Mr. Cameron testified that they're asking for approval of the project area, and Game and Fish filings that while not pushing back as like they did on the previous iteration, emphasizes micro siting. So I think if this project is to get a certificate, it needs to somehow emphasize that distinction. And I believe that in response to your questioning, Mr. Cameron, indicated that NextEra would seek PSC authorization before moving any turbine sites. And I think that's really an important point, not only in that was what was testified to, and it can make a difference potentially to a neighbor's view shed or noise or shadow flicker or anything like that, but just in light of the fact that there are the neighboring wetlands, and so moving those could in fact change the amount of impact that game and fish or U.S. Fish and Wildlife or anybody else might have with it. So I really think that is two key important points that need to be addressed, that I do think it's minimal as opposed to no impact, and that we go with the micro-siting.
And that makes sense to me. Brian Krosh, what issues do you have?
The one question that keeps going through my mind, we rely on Game and Fish, we rely on U.S. Fish and Wildlife to cite concerns with the project. But when you read the report written by Karen Smith, it is far more detailed, in my opinion, than anything I've seen from the other two entities. The last time, I believe, the compelling evidence, if you will, was you could not have picked a worse spot / location for a facility like that. Karen Smith's testimony is obviously, again, very extremely detailed. How do you reconcile the level of detail in her report with what I would view as more of a lack of detail by North Dakota Game and Fish in particular? Or is that just fall back on the discretion of each individual commissioner to weigh accordingly? And that would be a question for you, Brian.
Sure, and it's evidence. So the job of each of you is to sit there and weigh that evidence and determine what persuades you. As with the last project, we have evidence on both sides, and it's really going to be a judgment call by each commissioner as to which piece of evidence you find to be most persuasive, and how you view that evidence to guide your decision making moving forward. So, long answer to your simple question is it's up to each commissioner.
Okay, that was will continue to be the I think the component that I'll want to keep reviewing. I would, you know, that it's, you know, in terms of future cases, I would like to see a higher level of detail from Game and Fish. But I do have one other question. And when you read the siting law, it talks quite a bit, grasslands are mentioned. But the way grasslands are mentioned in the Siting Act, they're mentioned state grasslands, national grasslands, essentially public grasslands. There isn't a mention of privately held grasslands in the Siting Act. Because I've gone through it a number of times, I've talked to legal counsel about it, and I think the impression that we often get when we receive testimony from Game and Fish, North Dakota Game and Fish, for example, is that the grasslands or any type of grassland, and I'm not arguing that the impact to a grassland is no different whether it's publicly held or privately held, but there is a difference in terms of ownership and who has interest in that. So I don't think that was the bulk of the main point that the report that Karen Smith, or points that Karen Smith had written in her report. She certainly mentions grasslands, and impacted grasslands, but I would call those not the primary concerns. It was more to wetlands and avian species. So do you have any legal counsel of your own, Brian, in terms of the Siting Act, and if you feel there is a clear differentiation between publicly held and privately held grasslands?
Commissioner, under the Siting Act, the grasslands is mentioned in a couple different areas, but it's designated where registered state or national grasslands. Now, where grasslands can come into play, and where we've seen it come into play in the past, is our situations where the grasslands serve as a habitat to an endangered or threatened species, or the grasslands make up a unique type of habitat for a certain species that could be severely impacted. So I don't think that the answer necessarily is whether or not it's a grassland. It's whether or not that grassland serves as the habitat for a specific species, unless, of course, that grassland is a designated or registered state or federal grassland. I hope that answers your question.
No, and I would agree with that. You know, if it's on a windswept knoll, for example, is that considered habitat critical to a particular species? And I do recognize that, and I've taken that into account as I've gone through that component, but of the Siting Act itself. So, but no, fair enough. Fair enough. I believe I'm interpreting it correctly then, from just a habitat standpoint. It's not a publicly held tract of land. And that obviously is an important consideration, the habitat, the impact to habitat. I do understand that. So those were the two primary questions I had, Julie. So I didn't have anything beyond that. I'd have to go through my notes again, but for now, I think that would conclude my questioning.
Okay, great, thank you.
If I could intervene there, this would be a good lead into the next point of mine.
Okay, I had one comment on the Karen Smith. Is yours on that topic, Randy?
That and one other thing, yes.
Okay, you go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll just say, as far as privately held or publicly held native species grasses, you know, a key advisory agency is Game and Fish, and some of, I don't remember what the document is called, but what their primary concern when it comes to loss of habitat in North Dakota, as I recall, is not even wetlands or something like that. It's the native species grasses that are disappearing from the countryside. And so, of course, in private agriculture, that's, you know, it's, or in a small project, a pipeline or a transmission line or generation facility that doesn't fall under the Siting Act, it is in fact purely a private landowner decision. But the things that fall into the Siting Act, we look at the overall impact on the environment, and that advisory agency has cautioned on loss of native species grasses, both the loss of them and the separation of them with roads and such. And so, just like in coal mining, we don't just leave it up to the future owner and let everything be flat and cropped at the end. The grasslands need to be returned to native species grasses for the most part. There are exceptions, and same way here, they need to be protected. That's part of the whole overall Siting Act. On the Karen Smith document, though, one thing that I don't know if I misunderstood it, when I get to page 21, there are a number of studies that indicate they were done from 2017 to 2019. There's, I don't recall if it's one or two or three, I think it was more than one, but the one that I made the note of is Grauslek surveys. It indicated were done in 2017. I'm wondering, Brian, is that potentially just a typo, or do we need to look at that? Because it leaves me with a question and a concern. The concern being, why was it just looked at one quick time? And I think the point she's making is that it needs to be looked at over multiple years. But probably even more importantly, as the area of this facility has changed from the original Burke Wind project, there's new land added in. If the Grauslek surveys were done in 2017, does that imply that there were never Grauslek surveys done on the new areas of this project that weren't in the original Burke project?
Commissioner, that was an issue that we did get some testimony out of at the hearing, and I do recall asking some questions pointed towards that issue. I believe what they indicated their plan will be is to survey the area again right before construction, and then if they do encounter a Grauslek, they will not commence construction in that area until the breeding season is complete. I believe that's how the testimony came out. I'd have to go back and listen again to be 100% certain on it, but I do recall something to that effect being said at the hearing.
Okay, I guess I'd forgotten that. If that's the case, also in her testimony, she mentions several leks that she feels the company has missed. And so I don't know if there's some way to address those, and that it's not up to her to show the company where they're at, but if the company doesn't know about them, it's hard to avoid them. And I don't know where to leave that in my mind with these grouse leks.
Well, I think when we're talking about the grouse leks, it's a habitat, obviously, for grouse. I don't think there's any dispute about that. I know the company did indicate that they have a buffer around the known grouse leks. Now, whether, you know, between the time the application was submitted or the 2017 or I guess whenever, and the date the first shovel goes into the ground on this project, could there be a grouse lek in another location? I suppose that's a possibility. I'm certainly not a grouse expert, but I believe that was the purpose of them conducting an additional survey and then implementing some mitigative measures through construction is how their testimony came out. Again, I'd have to go back and check the recording of that to verify that I'm right, but I do recall something to that effect being said. So, you know, as far as, you know, what impact will this project have on grouse leks, you know, I guess you're gonna have to look at the evidence and make a determination for yourself as to whether you believe that's a significant issue or not. But, you know, overall, it was something that was addressed, and I can sure go back, listen to the hearing again and get more clarity as to what specific measures the company committed to taking prior to construction, if you'd like.
Okay, well, I find it helpful if there is in fact going to be at least these new areas resurveyed. So if you could just clarify that, I guess is all. And that's probably all I have on the environmental stuff. When we get into the intervener discussion, I might have some more to add.
Thanks, Randy. So I have a question. I turned off my video because my connection isn't strong enough today to support it, and it was just freezing up all the time, so I apologize for that. Hopefully you can hear me all right. Brian, how do we take or review away Karen Smith's testimony? You know, the company has established their witnesses as experts, which provides, you know, a pretty strong weight for what they're saying. Has Karen Smith established herself as an expert by legal standards or by how we weigh her presentation?
I would say arguably yes. She testified about her experience in the area. She used to work for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, when you're talking about whether someone's, you know, an expert or not, generally in a court of law, that just means their testimony isn't confined to the standard evidentiary rules of a lay witness. Here, we're not operating quite under that same standard. I think you can look at Ms. Smith's credentials, look at her report, and compare that to what the company has presented and draw your own conclusions as to who you believe is going to be more, I guess, whose opinion you're going to give more credit to. I know the company, you know, they cross-examined her, and I know the commission had an opportunity to hear that. And I also know that Ms. Smith has made her credentials quite well known to the commission. So it really comes down to how you view her report, her testimony, based on the evidence that we have in the record compared to what the company's presented and what you find to be most persuasive.
Okay. I recall at the last hearing her establishing her, you know, her credentials quite significantly in that record, but I don't see that as much in this one, to be honest. So have we folded the two records together? Or, I mean, just from a, I'm just thinking from a legal defense standpoint, I don't view her as having been established as an expert in this hearing.
Yeah, and I'm going back, and I know she did provide testimony about some of her background. I think she indicated that she graduated from Michigan State with a bachelor's degree, some type of science. I'd have to go back and listen specifically to what it was. And she's also been involved in authoring a couple of reports, and she did give some citations for those reports. Again, you know, it comes down to, you know, do you view her opinion to be reliable based on the information that she's presented? And then how does that fit into the citing criteria that we're looking at? You know, when we're talking about witness credibility, well, not even necessarily credibility, but weight of testimony that you're giving to a witness, that's an individual decision that you're going to have to make as commissioners. And, you know, as far as whether you view her credentials to be stronger or her reasoning to be better than what the company has presented, that's an individual decision that you're going to have to make.
I understand that. But when you're looking at weighing her against the company's experts and the agency's experts, and what the agencies, U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Game and Fish are saying, that, you know, becomes more of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously the standard we're looking at is preponderance of the evidence. So, in other words, greater than, you know, more likely than not. Is what she's saying more likely than not the truth, or is what the company and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Game and Fish are saying more likely than not the truth? And what's better supported? You know, do I think that her opinion can be given weight? Would that be defensible? Yes, I do think it would be defensible. Would it be defensible to go the other way on it? Yes, I think a sound argument can be made either way. As far as, you know, how much weight her report and her testimony should be given, like I said, again, that really comes down to you, but I think it's defensible, you know, either way from a purely legal standpoint if we're in a court of law.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I don't have any other environmental topics to discuss. So I guess unless one of my colleagues wants to explore those more, or staff, we can move on to the intervener's issues.
So just to wrap it up, Brian, you're going to kind of do a double check on the grouse lek or any other surveys that indicate that they may not have been done you know, on this new territory that was added, correct?
Yes, yeah, so I'll go back and listen to the hearing testimony on that issue and go back through the application and find what you're looking for on that issue.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so Brian, you want to walk through the brief that LIUNA presented and some of the ordering provisions that they included or requested in their post-hearing brief, and we can have a discussion on that.
Sure. And not to get too deep into the weeds on it, but essentially what we are looking at is their brief is essentially a summary of what they presented through at the hearing. They do have one proposed finding of fact. And that one states that no significant adverse impacts are foreseen to community services. The project could be of economic benefit to the affected area through the creation of construction, operation, and maintenance jobs, easement payments to landowners, state and local tax revenue, and local expenditures. The economic impact of the project will depend to a significant degree, however, on the utilization of local construction workforce and impacts of transmission constraints on local utilities and future energy projects. That's their proposed finding of fact, and really their argument for getting that in there is essentially that local workers are going to be more beneficial to the state than if people from out of state come in and have a greater positive economic impact on the state of North Dakota than if the labor force for this is farmed out. And they go through some analysis as to how if out-of-state laborers are used on this project, it's essentially phasing out the opportunity for local workers to not only work on this project, but potentially to work on future projects as well. So that's the basis of that finding of fact, at least my take on it from reading their brief. And then they also have a proposed order point, which would require the company to file quarterly reports with the commission within 45 days of the end of each quarter regarding construction workers that participated in the construction of the process. They want the report to detail the company's efforts and the site contractor's efforts to hire North Dakota workers, and they want to provide an account of the gross number of hours worked by workers who are qualified as North Dakota residents. And then they had a couple other things that they wanted in there too. Is they wanted a detail of the gross number of hours worked by workers who are residents of other states but maintain a permanent residence within 150 miles of the project, and then total gross hours worked. Essentially what they're asking for is an accounting of the labor force that would be used for this project. And the rationale for that is simply as a tracking mechanism to see how the company is utilizing a local workforce, and then use that as a means of essentially gauging the impacts that utilizing a local labor force would have as opposed to utilizing a non-local labor force, I guess.
Okay. So Brian, Randy, what are your thoughts on what LIUNA's asking for in this case? It's similar to what was discussed in the last one of our last wind hearings as well. So where are you guys on their request?
Well, this is Randy, and I would say you're right that to a large degree, it is similar to the previous discussion on the subject. You know, just like when we were talking earlier on environmental things, when it has to do with wildlife, I think it's important that we seek and value the opinions of agencies that have expertise in those areas, like Game and Fish. Just like we expect deference to decisions that we make in areas that are of our agency's expertise. And in this case, to add this to the order, when it has not garnered a request from Job Service, from the Labor Department, from the Commerce Department, I don't know if there are other applicable agencies. I'm struggling with that. However, I do want to say the finding of fact that they recommended. I'm not sure about the first couple sentences. I think the key point in it is the last sentence, that the economic impact of the project will depend to a significant degree, however, on the utilization of local construction workforce. I think that's the primary point. Then they go on about transmission constraints, which I don't think is really necessarily so much a part of this case at this point, or of this point anyway. But part of our siting does have to do with economic impacts, and that would really seem correct to me, that the impact of the project, the economic impact, will depend to a significant degree on utilization of local construction. And I don't see any strong objections to having that in there, unless someone can point out a reason why it shouldn't be.
Brian, what are your thoughts on Brian Schmidt, from a legal standpoint, adding that as a finding of fact?
As far as putting that in as a finding of fact goes, I don't have a real problem with it if you believe that the evidence supports that being a fact to add to the order. From a legal standpoint, I don't think that it's really overly significant one way or the other. If it's a comment that the commission wants to put into the order, I don't see any issue with it.
All right.
Well, just to be, it would be finding a fact, though, not in the order.
Correct. I'm sorry. In the proposed, in the finding of fact portion of the findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, yeah.
Not the ordering provision. So how about you, Commissioner Crosius?
I would like to see it included as a finding of fact. I think it would be difficult to dispute that as a finding of fact. It's more, the more companies utilize local workforce, the more benefit there is to the state. I think there's no question about that.
And then tying it to their presentation.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, we often acknowledge the information provided by various parties in the findings of facts, and so I'm comfortable with that too. My opinion on requiring the collection of the information from the companies, well, I agree wholeheartedly that the hiring of the local labor is an important piece of the economic impact of these projects. We just don't require that of businesses in any, you know, we don't go to the world companies and say, tell us how many local, keep track of the hours quarterly, how many local people you're hiring and using. And, you know, we don't ask other power generation facilities to do that type of thing, or fast food joints, or, you know, anybody else. Maybe there's some criteria for a business that gets like a loan from the Bank of North Dakota where they have to keep track of some of that sort of thing, but maybe Job Service does require that sort of data from some employers, but I I continue to see that it would have value, but it's another regulatory burden that I just don't feel is appropriate for our agency to levy. So I would not be in favor of doing that on this project either. But I definitely would be supportive of including the finding of fact. Commissioner Crosses, did you have thoughts about the ordering provision that Liona is requesting?
I think the provision one of the questions I would have on the provision would be for you, Brian, and that would be, given the criteria listed in as written in the Siting Act itself, is that defensible?
Are you asking if we put that requirement in, would it be defensible?
Correct.
I think there's an avenue to make it defensible. It's something that's there. What impact will this have on the local labor force? If the commission wanted to check and have a system of checks and balances on that, could you put it into a specific order? I think an argument can be made that you could. Would it be better to do that through an administrative rule? Probably, but is it necessary? Probably not. Again, as the agency, you have broad discretion in these things, and we can tailor orders, based on the evidence that's presented. I think it's something that could be done, but it's certainly not necessary.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Are there any other outstanding issues?
Well, I just want to add to that. I really think that this is a concept, though, that, whether the economic impact is maximized by hiring locally or not, I don't think it's really arguable. But I don't think that it's something where we could really take that position on one siting project and not on another either. So I think we need to be prepared for that to be potentially brought up in all siting cases. But like I said, I don't object to the finding of fact part, or I kind of like it even, although I do think that the first couple sentences are more detailed than we typically put into our findings of fact. I think it's really just mainly the main part of that last sentence that I think is the driver here.
All right. Well, any other issues you guys want to discuss?
I don't have any.
I don't either, and it sounds like Randy doesn't either. Go ahead.
I just want to confirm with Brian. Because I don't recall where we left off on probably the first thing that I mentioned as far as the micro-siting versus project area. Any possibility of approving this thing, I presume, will be written up in a way that will require the company to seek commission approval before moving any turbines. Am I correct?
That is how I understood the company, even I believe, committed to as much at the hearing, because I know that was something that we did get into about what would possibly make you move any of these turbines, and they said you know, there really wouldn't be anything unless they had to use one of the alternates that they have identified. And I want to say that they committed to it at the hearing that they would have to notify the commission if they were going to move any of the turbines from the location identified in the map that was presented. I can go back and verify that. If nothing else, that's something that we would definitely put in the order.
Well, I think that's the key point that I'm driving at, though. I thought that they said they would seek PSC authorization, but that wasn't really what the application was saying, but that's what I recall from the testimony. Big difference in my mind between seeking PSC authorization or notifying the PSC.
Yeah, and I agree. I think with the comments that we received from Game and Fish, their lack of strong objection to this project was largely based on the specific location of the turbines. So I think there's enough there in the order to, or enough there in the evidence to defend something like that in the order for sure.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. As for format, Brian, I think that's something you and I can kind of discuss. And maybe we come up with a propose and we'll shop it around to everybody.
I think that's fine.
Okay. So then I don't know that there's any other questions that I have, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, thank you. Do you know if any staff members may have had any questions they would like to ask?
No one jumped in when I was mentioning it. I'm not sure who from staff is listening besides Stacy.
Right, I'm looking at the initials of the callers. It's kind of like Hollywood Squares. I'm looking at the grid.
I see Pat Fawn and Brian Johnson for sure, Adam Renfeld.
Okay, let's just, Pat, do you have any questions, or Adam, Brian?
This is Pat Fawn. I have no questions.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Crosius, this is Adam Renton. No questions.
Okay, thank you. All right, I don't believe we have any other questions of staff. Mr. Schmidt, anything further from you?
I think the only thing I'd be looking for any clarity on, I think I got quite a bit of it today. The next step, I think, is probably to go ahead and put together a proposed order. And then we'll get that circulated and we can determine whether another work session is going to be necessary or not at that time. I'm going to look into the survey issues related to the grouse lakes, get some clarification on that in the record, and also dig into the micro siting issue a little bit more as well. Otherwise, I think that covers pretty much everything that I had on my list to have covered today, unless the commission believes that I'm missing something or would like me to dig into some other point of emphasis.
Okay, I don't believe that would be the case. So with that said, thank you everyone. This work session on PU-19-376 and PU-19-377 is concluded. Again, thank you.